Welcome to Health Media Now with award-winning author and host Denise Messenger for a lifetime of health empowerment. Live by being in the pink, meaning P stands for being persistent, I stands for using your intuition, N stands for networking, and K stands for obtaining knowledge. Our guests entertain and share cutting-edge information. They share with you what may have taken years to achieve through experience in their field. Become inspired and motivated. Reach your full potential with fascinating tips and products. Receive a lifetime of benefits from authors, doctors, practitioners, healthcare providers, and learn about exciting new products. You asked for it, and we deliver. Now, here's your host, Denise Messenger.
Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad that you're joining us today. Of all days, it's April 1st. But we're not going to do a Fool's Day program today. But we are going to delve into a subject that is fascinating to me. And I usually do one show a year relative to this subject matter. We're going to be talking about life and love and that it exists after death. Two women collaborated on an amazing book. I read the entire thing in one sitting. It's called Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death and the Afterlife. We have with us today both authors. We have Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Montanaro. So let me bring them onto our show now so we can get right into the depth of this amazing, spirited book. Hello.
Hi, Denise. It's Catherine. Thanks for having us.
Hi, Denise. It's Jocelyn, but you can call me Joss, and thanks for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. Well, I always start my show out by asking, how did you get on this journey, particularly the two of you together?
Jocelyn, you want to take that?
Sure. Well, my husband, as you know, since you've read the book, was recovering from a brain tumor surgery. He had glioblastoma, had gone in a surgery to remove as much of the tumor as they could, although they told us he probably only had about a year left. And in the recovery room, an artery tore in his head, and he had a massive stroke, and everything went downhill from there. We were supposed to be home in 4 days. 26 days later, he's still in the coma. He's had 5 brain surgeries because they don't know why he's not waking up. There's no medical reason that they can figure out why this guy isn't waking up. And my sister had been friends with Catherine for years, and Catherine has this amazing gift where she can communicate with God and have dialogues with God and the deceased and people in comas. And my sister had had several writings with her over the years and had gotten great comfort and insight from them, but I didn't really believe that she could do it. I didn't buy into it. And when my sister kept saying, you should have a writing with Catherine, I just said no, because I was, not a believer in a God or a higher power, really. And if there was one, in my mind, he was killing my husband. The last thing I wanted to do was hear from him. And I'd been praying like crazy. And, of course, he's getting worse, not better. And then my sister said, well, she'll just pray with you. She's a prayer chaplain. I'm like, forget it. You know, that's even less of a yes. But, you know, after a month, I was all out of hope and all out of ideas, and desperate times to call for desperate measures. And so I finally just thought, what do I've got to lose? And so we set up our first first session. It was done over the phone. I was at UCLA and Catherine was in Washington, and that's how it began.
So you contacted her 1 month later from his diagnosis, or 1 month later from the entire process?
I connected with Catherine after my husband Kevin had been in a coma for 26 days.
Okay.
So he'd been in a coma for almost a month, and they didn't know why he was waking up. And I just kept saying, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, because even though we had talked, Kevin and I, about kind of the end stage of his life and stuff because he had a terminal illness, this wasn't supposed to be the end. He was supposed to go into UCLA, get the dang thing taken out, and be home in 4 days. And mm-hmm. here we were almost a month later, and he was just a train wreck. He had a trach tube, and he had a stomach tube, and he had a breathing tube, mm-hmm. and it was
nothing
everything
they were
that
doing
could have gone wrong did.
Yeah.
You know, and he couldn't wake up, and they couldn't wake him up, and that's why I ultimately agreed to have the writing with Catherine to see if I could just get some insight from somebody, anything out there about what the heck was going on and what I should do. But, you know, honestly, yeah. I really didn't think much would come of it.
And then what ended up happening is during our phone conversation, he thought he was dreaming, and he thought he was in a post-anesthetic dream. And when he found out he wasn't, he was able to rouse himself from the coma while we were on the telephone call together. And just a little side note, Jocelyn is an attorney. Her husband, Kevin, was an attorney, a mediator. And so Jocelyn, being the good lawyer, asked him a test question to make sure that she was really communicating and connecting to Kevin. And he blew her mind in what he told her, and she can tell you what that was. But and that's kind of how it started.
So when the writing, I'll just tell you quickly, when the writing first started, all writings start with a God introduction.
And one second,
and,
just put in there, when she's saying a writing, so just so your listeners understand, mm-hmm. is that I'm sensing the energy, I'm turning that into prose, and I write down a written record of the conversation because it's a lot for, you know, it's a lot of information. So when she's saying a writing, just so you know, I'm completely present. I'm not going anywhere. It's just like we're talking right now. So go on, Jocelyn. Sorry to interrupt you, but just so people understand.
No, I'm glad you clarified that because I've had so many of them. You know, miraculous, the miracle of the actual, you know, experience. I don't want to say I've taken it for granted, but I've had so many of them. I forget that people don't know what I know about it, so I apologize for that. But anyway, I asked him. All the writings start with a God introduction, which kind of gives you a preview about what's coming, and although you don't really realize that at the time. And then Catherine said, well, I hear a man's voice. And I said, well, who is it? And he goes, it's me, Kevin. And that's when he said he thought he was dreaming. He had no idea he'd been in a coma for 26 days. And then he said a few other general things. He asked how the kids were. He named them by name. And I thought, you know, my sister Vicky could have told her what my kids' names were and, you know, the other general things. And so I asked him what the last thing was that he remembered. And he told me something so specific that I knew that Catherine couldn't have known that. And what he told me was that the last thing he remembered was reaching up and taking Linda's hand. That's the brain surgeon, Dr. Linda Liao, and saying, thank you for doing this, Linda. And when she said that, I was floored. I mean, I literally almost fell off my chair because after the surgery, you know how the surgeons come out to tell you how it's gone. And she said, she comes in and we're all nervous. She goes, everything's fine. Everything went great. But I got to tell you, before I get into details, your husband's just the nicest man. You know, as we're wheeling him in, he reaches up and grabs my hand and says, thank you for doing this, Linda. And the only people that heard it were me and my two kids. And then, you know, half an hour later, the artery tore in his head. Everything went downhill from there. It was just a complete train wreck. And I never repeated it to anyone. And I never really thought about it again because, you know, when everything just goes south, it's a lot, you know, you just don't think about those little things. And so when he said that, I knew it was him because that was the last thing he remembered. And obviously, I knew that because from what the surgeon told me, and that was right before they put him under.
It's incredible.
So then I knew I was talking to him, and from there, the conversation, the communication, I should say, you know, took a different turn because I knew it was him, and so then we just started talking like you and I are talking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, in your book, you have a lot of conversations.
There's six
complete
writings in the book.
Complete, yeah.
Yeah. And as you know, since you've read them, it's really the bulk of the book because they're just so incredible and amazing. And we wanted to share with, you know, when we wanted to write this book, we wanted to share it all word for word. And a lot, most of them were actually recorded, which is something Catherine doesn't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And so which was great about that is you could just hear every little detail and sigh and when I'm crying and the, you know, the tone. And it's just an amazing experience.
And so just for your listeners, the book is written like as a four-part narrative: God, Kevin, her husband, Jocelyn, and myself. And Kevin takes sharing with in these writings, in these sessions, shares, he's coaching Jocelyn in her letting go of him, how to handle his death, and then talks to her from his deathbed and to his children, says his last goodbye, and also talks about what he saw when he died and then what the hereafter, the afterlife is for him. So it really, he really, in a way, provides a vantage point that few of us ever have or hear about
mm-hmm.
or,
mm-hmm.
you know, can know until we're having our own experience. So, yeah.
Well, they had an incredible...
And you know, Denise, if I hadn't had this experience, I wouldn't believe it. You know, I'm not a drink the Kool-Aid kind of a person, and
mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, as an attorney by training and just one of those people that needs a direct experience to believe pretty much anything, or at least or watch someone have one, you know.
Right.
But I would have, you know, if I heard this from somebody else, I wouldn't believe it either unless I'd had this experience. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to share it. Because
mm-hmm.
I was, and still, in so many ways, question everything. And, you know, I think there are a lot of people like me out there, you know, who could benefit from this.
Yeah, now that the book's out there, people are coming out of the woodwork because we've all had our experiences, our own
mm-hmm.
feeling someone we love that's gone is with us, our own, you know, ways in which we may never have told anybody, but we have readers reach out to us. And when I was 8 years old, I felt my grandmother, or, you know, my husband died 4 years ago, but I always feel him near me, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we're all having these experiences, and it's sort of a kind of a taboo topic, death in general can be. So, you know, that's what we're hoping is that people, you know, death is as normal as birth, really. And, you know, unfortunately in the times we're living in right at the moment, you know, it's never been more salient, you know, this fear of death. And what we know is the people we love who go on don't go into a big void, a big black hole, and never
mm-hmm.
to be seen or heard from again. They're present, and our love is not taken away or extinguished at death.
What came to mind while reading the book was the true love story between Jacqueline and her husband.
Right.
And that's my favorite part. And I, Catherine laughs, but Kevin and I, I don't even think I adequately conveyed it because we had a wonderful, great marriage. We just totally dug each other. That's the only way I could put it. We worked together and we weren't working. We never wanted to be anywhere other than with each other. I don't think most couples after 25 years, you know, feel like that, but we could never get enough of each other. And so that connection, you know, held through all of this. People comment to me all the time about that. You know, how did you get so lucky? And I said, I have no idea. I always told myself if he figured out what I was really like, he would run the other way because he was such a high, he was such a better quality person than I was, and it still is. But I just lucked out.
Well,
women always ask me that, how'd you get him? And I said it was pure luck. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah,
pure luck.
Well, Catherine, let me ask you this. In obviously, you have other experiences with other people. Is there an element to this relative to the fact that Jocelyn was so close with her husband that you were able to get them to communicate?
No. I mean, I can do I've done hundreds of these sorts of facilitations. So it really wasn't it wasn't a product of their level of love or attachment, because you know all love is unique and individual to the people that are experiencing it. So in that way, no, it wasn't, because the ones we love are always connected to us. So
mm-hmm.
Now why this story, and why you know, this turned into a book. I think that was sort of a greater, you know, plan by God, if you will, to have this be the story. But no, I don't think that you need to have some wonderful romantic love story to stay connected, because mothers and children, fathers, parents and children, children and their parents, children and their grandparents, you know, this is one kind of love, but all types of love reach and connect us. So,
Jocelyn, have you been able to connect with any other people that possibly have in your life?
Yes, just a few. I once, when I was having a writing with Catherine, and I was thinking about going to Hawaii with my sister-in-law, and I wasn't really, you know, sure I wanted to go for the summer. My youngest son was going to be going on a service trip, and so I had some time. And she said, you know, you should go to Hawaii. Go to Hawaii. You know, come with me to Hawaii. She used to live there, and I was on the fence, and I was having a writing with Catherine. And when Kevin was done talking, she goes, I hear there's a different man. And then my brother said, hey, Joss, Richard here. And that's just and when she's communicating the download, her voice inflects the way they would inflect. Like, it's her voice, but she would say things exactly the way Kevin would say them. Or it sounds like him, but out of her voice. And so he said, you know, hey, Joss, Richard here. And I just was, because he'd been dead for, you know, probably, I don't know, 10 years. And he said, go to Hawaii, and you'll have a great time, and she won't go without you. And she's always been, you know, just like a sister to you, which she has been and always was. And so, I went, and we talked a little more about some other things, and I asked him how it was going, and he said it was going great, you know. And he said that he thanked me for continuing my friendship with his wife after he passed, and being there for his family. And then my dad chimed in, and he goes, "Hey, Tiger," which is the nickname he always called me my whole life, and I'm like, "Dad." And he said, go to Hawaii. And I said, okay, I'll go. And then he said, you know, and start enjoying your life again. And he said, you know, he said, you love to dance, go dancing. Like don't, you know, start living again.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then that was really neat too, because just to, you know, hear that. So those are the only other two I've had, because honestly, I only ever wanted to talk to Kevin. But
of course,
you know, my sister has talked to lots of different members of our family, including my mother, who just recently died in August.
Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, it's funny. When she was dying, it was, I know I'm digressing a little bit, but after this experience I had with Kevin, you know, I don't fear death anymore. The number one takeaway that I have from all of this is that I'm okay, everyone's okay, and death is not a failure, which is like, if you live your life thinking that, it frees you to be honest and loving and, you know, all kinds of things that you just, you don't sweat the small stuff anymore, you know, when you know you're kind of held in huge, loving, universal arms. And when my mom, who was 91, she got sick over the summer, and she very quickly was going to go to hospice. And I said, okay, I'm going to come with you, and I'm going to stay with you the whole time, and I'm going to do the hospice thing with you, because the hospice staff can't really take care of them as much as they need. You know, they can't feed them every meal and everything. And it was such a completely different experience than I'd had with Kevin at hospice. And my mother was in the same hospice facility at the same month that my husband was 6 years later, the exact same place in Santa Barbara. We were in the same hospice facility.
Oh,
but the experience was so different because I knew she was fine. I knew she was going to, that there was something else after there for her. And not stressing about her dying. I mean, it was exhausting, of course, taking care of someone 24/7, even though the nurses are there, and my brother and sister helped, of course. But I just said, you know, Mom, you're going to be fine. I have zero worries about where you're going after this. My job is to make sure you get there in no pain, and that's what I'm here for. We're just going to make this as smooth as possible. And it wasn't like an anxiety-provoking experience like it was with Kevin. I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, he's going to die, he's going to die, he's going to die, you know. And but then I knew afterwards that he was fine. He was better than fine, and he was still there, and he's, you know, and he's still here. So it helps you be with other people who are having that same experience and not make it a tragedy. And that's good for them, because when they're around people who are just so freaked out about it, it makes it an anxiety provoking experience, you know. And
sorry, Jocelyn, did you want to finish?
I'm just saying it doesn't need to be.
Oh, okay. Catherine, are children able to do the same as Jocelyn is with Kevin? In other words, are Jocelyn's children able to communicate with Kevin?
Well, there's a writing in the book where they did at hospice. Is that what you're asking? It doesn't really matter who's the age or if it's – I have a lot of parents who have lost children that communicate with their children who have passed or children.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's no
Age barrier, correct?
And also, Denise, there's no time barrier. So somebody who could have died – I have a woman I just love dearly named Jen, and she's 84 now, and when she was a young girl in high school, she fell in love with a Native American in North Dakota, Native American boy. She's Caucasian, and that was super big taboo, no-no, and he mysteriously disappeared and was later found deceased, so we won't go into that story. So she's 84. I probably have been connecting with Don, was her boyfriend at the time, for the last 25 years. And so he was gone however many years he was gone, 50 some odd years, and just as available. So this idea of time and space that we hold in this 3D kind of reality, it doesn't matter. Those principles or laws that we ascribe to of how things work here and there, they're completely different. They're not limited. They're really unlimited. So it's not
Love
only
that.
Age or the length of time you're gone or anything. 'Cause love doesn't have a time. Love doesn't live in a linear time frame. We all know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not held to those rules.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Jocelyn, are you still communicating with Kevin?
You know, I haven't had a writing in a while. I think we've had a total of, I want to say 54 or 52.
That's a lot.
Over the last, we've had a lot of them. And although I haven't done one in a while, but I still get, and this is in the book too, as you know, signs all the time, and from him. But with this, how things are going right now, he's been on my mind. I mean, he's always on my mind, but more so now with what's happening, because I'm worried about my children and, I'm worried. And
sure.
I have been talking to him, you know, I'm worried about this, I'm worried about that. But I'm not too worried. I mean, I'd rather not get sick and die, because I just had a grandchild. I'd like to enjoy it for a while. But I know if that happens,
no,
I'm going to be fine. But, you know, I'd like to stick around for a little while if I could. And
everybody's
going to
be just fine.
Either way, I'm going to be just fine. Either way, I'm going to be fine. But lately I've been, conversing with him a lot more. And between him and I, as you read this in the book, when he wants to send me a sign, there's often a squirrel involved. I can't leave my house or go anywhere with a squirrel not running right in front of me in the car, this or that. this morning, we were just about to start a radio interview, and I looked out my window because my dog started to bark, and I was just about to put him in the other side of the house so they wouldn't hear it on the interview. And I look at my window, and on the telephone line is a squirrel. And there's this one squirrel that always goes on this telephone line right in front of my window whenever I'm going to have an interview. And I always look out, and that dang squirrel is always there. And so it seems like he's always present with me.
Yeah.
And
the other thing is that, as you know, in our book Beyond Ever After, you know, he's coaching her. He's giving her advice. He's seeing things coming. He's guiding her, because they have a much more in-depth view of us and what's going on, and have that kind of finger on the pulse line. So while it's wonderful to have signs and very meaningful to say that they're there, in the writings and in those dialogues, they know things that are more pressing than we do. Because, of course, all of us have our blind spots as individuals, you know, and our protective mechanisms of self-defense and denial. And surely all of those alarm bells are going off in the time of Corona, right? And so what Kevin offers in the book is a way to frame death, to frame uncertainty. One thing I want to make sure that we do touch on is that you had raised the issue about him, children talking to their parent. And
yes,
as you know, when Kevin was in the hospice Serenity House here in Santa Barbara, I went and did a writing for his family in which Kevin said goodbye to his children. It was his last goodbye. Of course, he was comatose again and actively in the late stages of dying, the death process. But, he told them how much he loved them. He told them what had shaped him as a person, all those pearls of wisdom that we want to share with our children, let's say, or that we think, I've got lots of time to do this. I can, and his appreciation for them. And of course, I asked Jocelyn, and this is all in the book, I said, did you know Kevin? She said, no. You know, I knew some of the details, but I did not know all of that. So I really want to say that also this is a time to communicate how you love each other, what you appreciate in specifics, and don't assume that we all have time. I mean, I know that we feel like there's a big clock tower over us right now with this coronavirus. But that's so important to remember, to write person a note or write them an email, because sometimes it can be feel very awkward to share your appreciations or to hear it. You know, it's embarrassing when someone says, you know, I really love you and I appreciate you. Oh, yeah, thank you, I know. So I really think that that is something that we talk about in the book, that of course when the loved one goes, gives so much peace to that person and gives the person the permission to die, because we have all heard those stories where, you know, mom is holding on until her son makes it from Florida and then he arrives and 3 minutes later she passes or whatever. So I think that raising that connection of gratitude and love explicitly with the people that we love right now, you know, after you listen to the show, pick up the doggone phone or type an email or whatever it is, because that ends up being the most important thing. And we think about now, people are passing and their loved ones are not with them, are not able to go into hospitals to see them. And I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer about this, but let's just do that now. I mean, I believe that in heart we can communicate across distance and time, and we don't need to be right in the room. But I also wanted to be sure to, you know, make that that reminder something that we share, and we do share in our book, but
no,
it's all the more salient now.
Yeah. It's a great message.
Well, you know, Catherine, yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Denise.
No, go on.
So I was going to say that when this coronavirus thing really started heating up, and, you know, of course, I've been thinking about all the implications about it, as everyone has been, and I've been doing just that. I've been reaching out to people just by text and email, just saying, you know, these are really unsettling and unprecedented times, and I just want you to know that I really, you know, valued the, you know, connection we had at, you know, whenever that was, you know. I mean, I'm reaching out to people at all different times in my life, and I just want you to know that, you know, you were important to me at one point, and even though we haven't connected in a long time, I thought of you, and I just wanted to reach out and tell you I hope you're safe and well, and that, you know, maybe when this is all done, we can connect again and not have it be so long. And I felt about just reaching out, you know, and just throwing that. And the funny thing is, nobody said anything back to me yet. I probably did 15 of those.
I haven't heard a word back. I was going to say, you know, I'm still waiting to get my email from you or my.
Well, yeah, I talk to you every day, so.
Oh, that's too much.
But
yeah, no, I mean, there's no question right now. We're all in what I consider a timeout.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But and then we have that social distancing, so it's really important to keep up with everyone, you know, via phone calls or texts or whatever, because, you know, there's a certain percentage of the population that lives by themselves.
Right.
And they need our support more so than ever. And as a community,
right.
We need to pull together to help everyone. This isn't about just us or our families. This is a really big thing.
It's an unprecedented thing. Yeah, I belong to some communities that have a lot of elderly people, and so I'm starting weekly Zoom meetings because I know that a lot of them live alone, and to see the other faces of the people that they're used to seeing once a week, it just warms your heart. It's like, I'm not alone. There's Sally. I see her every Thursday morning at 10. Oh, hi, Sally, you know. And going forward, that we have these communities and connections, that we activate them, that we groundswell those, because that is what's going to get us through this. And, you know, that's the power of love and connection and gratitude. And that's available whether I'm sitting in my office talking to you or, you know, I'm in a restaurant having a conversation with you, you know, and you're sharing this message, so, and all the messages you share.
I'm hopeful, truly hopeful, that when we come out of this situation, that it's going to change things.
Yeah. Well, we get real about what's important.
Exactly. Exactly. In other words, we're not going to just all go back to the way we were before, where, you know, families were sitting and having dinner and everybody's on their texting on their phones instead of actually communicating. Now what's happening is everybody's at home and it's not going on quite as much as it was before. We have more time.
Well, you know, I'm in, we both are, we're in Santa Barbara. You know, when I'm walking in my neighborhood and I'm seeing the garage doors open and I'm seeing families in their, on their driveways shooting hoops, and I'm seeing lots more people walking because probably they're not working anymore. So, you know, and it almost seems like it's the 60s again in some way.
Exactly.
There's this more people. I mean, I'm thankfully we don't live in New York or a high density area that we can walk, and you see somebody coming on the sidewalk, you go into the street. You know, it's easy to do, but I am marveling at, it's almost as if we've rolled back the time clock.
Yes.
And, you know, people smile and they wave. And, you know, I know we're early on in this, but, yeah, it's just, and people have time. You know, we're not just busy with our head going forward, like I have to check my list, I got to stop by the grocery store. So, but this is the message of our book, Beyond Ever After, is death is not an ending, that the love and connections we forge and have here, they sustain us in this life and in the next. And to know that and to really feel that in your heart, that if, and we probably will be losing people that we love and know, unfortunately, or a friend of somebody's or whatever, and to know that death is not an ending, just because we can't see beyond it, what's right here and now, can bring tremendous comfort and tremendous hope, and that we have these guardian angels, people who love us, however you want to conceive of it, God, Spirit, the source of love, whatever it is, that can come and be with us and is not contagious, is not going to infect us with anything but love and more peace and more gratitude and more appreciation. And that is hard to remember when you're afraid and you're a human like we are, and especially in these particular times. But it is accessible to us. And, you know, we may not be able to hold hands with our friends, but we can be held by this connection that lives in our hearts, inside us, that's alive and active and can reach forward to people in this life and in the next. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Beautifully said. No, it's beautifully said.
Not a soapbox,
really.
Catherine. I was, you know, Denise, I completely agree with you about this kind of reset. And I was thinking how the stock market has had this huge correction. And I was talking about it with my youngest son. Well, he's 20 now. And he said, we've needed a societal correction for a long time. We needed not just a market correction, but a societal correction.
Yes.
And he's always told me, God, I wish I lived in the 50s. When, you know, everyone sat around dinner at the same time,
oh,
and they
gosh.
Did this and they did that. And now we're all forced to do that, and it's great. I have never had this much food in my refrigerator. I'm making three meals a day for my kid who's home from college. I haven't been this happy in I'm in this horrible situation, but I have my family here. And we're interacting, like you were saying, in a way that we haven't in a long time because we have the time. And it's definitely a silver lining in this very dark cloud.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's truly a blessing. And my worldview at this point is we can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow, but we have today and we have now, right now. And we need to make the best of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is within our purview. we can make choices, and I hope we choose kindness and love and appreciation and connection. And I think we are. I think the vast majority of us are, and that's just warming and hopeful.
Absolutely. Well, I encourage everyone that is listening today and that will hear our podcast in the days to come to purchase the book Beyond Ever After. It is an amazing book. I think it'll open you up to true love, hope for the future, and obviously our current beliefs about death.
And, you know, we have a website where people can share their stories. What we're finding from our book is everybody has had these experiences where they felt grandma or, you know, just felt the connection. And many of us have, you know, helped with people or lost loved ones and been there when they've died. And we know that that can be sacred space. It can be sometimes the most loving space. And so we have a Submit Your Story on our website, beyondeverafter.com.
That's
beyondeverafter.com. And you would be amazed at how many people are sharing their stories and saying, you know, when I was 12, I had this experience, and I've never forgotten it, and I'm, you know, 72 now, and it changed, you know, and I'm not afraid to die. Or my grandmother came to me, and, you know, and I hope we start having these conversations that death isn't this taboo topic, that it is, you know, birth is a joyous event, and death is, while sad, is not sad for the person who's dying. And that, too, can be, you know, I'm glad we call them now, some people have celebrations of life, you know. It's just really sinking into that deeper gratitude of what we bring to one another and who we are to each other, and, you know, so.
Yeah, I, on a personal note, I had the opportunity to comfort an ex-boyfriend's wife. He was a boyfriend of mine in my 20s, and, you know, we stayed in communication over the years, and he passed, and the very morning that he passed, and I wasn't even in the same city, there was a bird. You know, you with your squirrels. Well, this was a bird, and it would not be quiet. It was outside my office window, and it would not shut up. It went on and on and on and on and on. It went on for about 15 minutes, and I thought, this is the craziest, weirdest thing. And then I realized,
you know, it's funny.
Whoa.
Go ahead.
I called his wife, and he had passed that morning.
Wow. Wow.
You know what's funny is we get, as Catherine was saying, we get all these people writing in, and I always respond. I just want you to know that you will get a response if you write in. And I cannot tell you how many bird things are in there.
Really?
It's a bird. Yes. Yeah, so, like, for example, someone had a their loved one who passed was an avid bird watcher and always loved red robins. And they were in a different part of the country when this person died and didn't even know they would die. But all of a sudden, in a snowstorm at 2 o'clock in the morning, they hear this peck, 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 peck out in the window. And they go to the window, and there's this red robin in the snow pecking on the window. Peck, 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 peck. It's so funny because birds seem to, well, all animals, I think, but it's when you said
yeah,
that,
I just know.
Thought there's been people sharing stories. There's been a lot of bird stories in there. So I don't know if it's the wings have something to do with it or whatever. But
what do you say about that, Catherine? What's your take on it?
They take themselves lightly. They take themselves lightly, these birds. They have plenty
over. But it's just funny you say that because everyone talks about the birds.
Well, I really enjoyed both of you joining us today. it's just been great. Really made my day, and I'm sure it's going to make everybody else's when they hear our podcast going forward. So thank you again, Catherine Weisenberg and Jocelyn Monteiro. People, please get their book, Beyond Ever After, A Heart-to-Heart Journey Through Death and the Afterlife.
Available on Amazon. You can just go to Amazon. So,
excellent. It might be a little while to get the book because food is on there.
It's an e-book, so you don't even have to worry about
touching it.
It's available as an e-book.
So. Beautiful.
We weren't thinking that when we made it an e-book available, but
it
does come in handy.
Excellent.
So. Well,
no,
thank
I was just
you,
gonna
Denise,
say,
for having us.
I was just going to say, you know, you might not get it right away because Amazon right now, they have to deliver food first. Everything else is secondary.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, you
so
take care.
So ebook to spiritual nourishment. Yeah.
There you go. Take care, both of you, and may your families be well.
You
All right.
too, Denise.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For having us. That was a lot of fun.
It was great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening in today. It was a great interview. Join us again next Wednesday. We'll have another special guest and a great topic. Until then, please be well. Bye-bye.
We celebrate our listeners worldwide and invite you to contact Denise at www.healthmedianow.com with any questions you may have. And follow her on Twitter at Health Media Now and Facebook at Health Media Now. For those interested in an advertising campaign on her show, contact Lisa at KnowledgeWorksPub.com. Be sure to visit GotCancerNowWhat.com for information on Denise Messenger's award-winning book, Got Cancer, Now What?